It's the 365 Days of Astronomy podcast, coming in 3, 2, 1.
Listening to the NASA Lunar Science Institute podcast, which highlights the latest news and information of the moon, on the moon, and from the moon. It's produced by the NASA Lunar Science Institute at the Ames Research Center in Moffett Field, California.
Hello. I'm Elizabeth Howell for the NASA Lunar Science Institute. NASA recently invited commercial partners to submit their thoughts on a potential lunar lander. If it goes forward, this would be the first American lander in years. Orbital missions, however, are also important for lunar science. To hear more, we will speak with David Morrison. He is a senior scientist at NLSI.
Thank you for joining us, Dr. Morrison. Can you give a brief summary of the current lunar missions that NASA is participating in?
NASA has a long history with the moon. It's obviously right there. It's close. It's a fascinating object. And the only NASA mission right now that's planned for the future is LADEE, which I can tell you about. But we also have a lot of international partners who are going to be going back to the moon. There are missions planned from India, from China, from Russia. Even Korea, the president of Korea just made a commitment that Korea should put its own satellite in orbit around the moon. So it continues to be a place that draws us, a wonderful nearby planetary object that people are interested in.
I note that these are all orbital missions that you have been speaking of between these different countries and NASA. And looking into the near future, there recently was a request for information for a commercial partner to lead a lunar lander project. Now, those proposals are still being evaluated as we speak. But in general, I was wondering what NASA's aim is in doing that project.
NASA, at least from the scientific point of view, has two really interesting areas that we would like to explore on the surface. One is near the lunar poles, where we have found that there are large deposits of water ice, which is interesting scientifically, and it's an interesting potential resource. And we really would like to get on the ground near the pole and even ideally to explore down into these cold, permanently shadowed craters where we know there's ice. The other place is on the far side of the moon, away from the Earth, what we call the South Pole Aiken Basin, which appears to be a very ancient, very large impact structure that actually excavates down into below the crust of the moon, into its mantle. And we would love to land there and bring back samples just to get our first look at the interior of the moon.
Now, you had mentioned all the orbital architecture circling the moon, but what advantages does a lander give us?
With a lander, you can find out what's actually there. In the case of the lunar poles, we have the indirect evidence that there is ice and other volatiles. We'd like to go down and actually dig into it. We'd like to know if there's subsurface ice. Probably there is, and that might extend over a much larger area of the moon, a permafrost. In the case of the South Pole Aiken Basin, which is the other place we would like to land, we really want to return samples. We would really like to have pieces of material from the interior of the moon that we think we can uniquely pick up there and bring back for scientific analysis.
So you get a close-up view as well as ground truth with the lander. And what are the science reasons to go with an orbital mission?
Orbiters give you the broad view of the moon. And as our instrumentation has gotten better and better, we've learned more and more from the orbiters. The Lunar Reconnaissance Orbiter, LRO, that's in orbit now, has been operating for 4 years, has returned more data than all the other U.S. planetary missions put together. It's imaging the surface at resolution of about 1 foot, and of course that allows us to see the Apollo sites and all kinds of things that we didn't know were there before. Also, orbiters can carry these broad multispectral ranges of instruments that just give us a whole range of detailed scientific information. And finally, LADEE, the next mission we have, the NASA mission that's supposed to launch, is looking at the very thin lunar atmosphere. It's swooping down extremely close to the surface to sample the dust and the material in that atmosphere and the impacting solar wind that interacts with the lunar surface. So that's something that we've never done before. We've never had a mission that can sample the area from, say, 10 to 20 miles above the surface.
So clearly there are useful things associated with both landers and with orbital missions. If you were to pick an ideal mix of missions, what kinds of orbiters and landers would you want to have exploring the moon together?
I like the idea of exploring the moon with a broad-based international set of partners. I don't think this is something NASA wants to do alone. We know we would like to go to the surface, to near the lunar poles, into the South Pole Basin, but I think other countries sending orbiters with their own mix of instruments and their own objectives really provides us the most useful approach to exploring the moon. The moon is an international resource, and the more countries are involved in these scientific and exploratory missions, the better it will be.
So looking back at NASA's accomplishments since the Apollo era, we certainly have seen an improvement in the resolution and also the quality of the data that's come back to us in lunar exploration. Can you speak a little bit about some of the things that we have seen that weren't even possible or imagined a few decades ago?
The moon just turns out to be a fascinating object as you look at it with better and better resolution and better equipment. We know now, for instance, that there are caves in the moon, that there are places where you can get down probably to former lava tubes and be protected down the inside, a little bit below the surface. That is a wonderful prospect if we ever want long-term human visitation to the moon, because you need some protection from cosmic rays and solar cosmic rays. We know that the surface contains water. This was never dreamed before. In the Apollo era, we thought of the moon as being extremely dry. Now we know that there's water in the chemistry of the surface. There's deposits of permafrost near the poles. There are even large deposits of frozen ponds of water. And this opens up the whole idea of the moon not just as a place where we could live, where we could have colonies, but as a place where we could manufacture rocket fuel that would enable us to travel much more cheaply throughout the solar system. So the moon is a cool place, and we're very lucky to have such a fascinating object orbiting close to the Earth within easy reach.
I certainly agree with you. Thank you for talking with us, Dr. Morrison.
You're welcome.
To find out more about this topic, visit our website at www.lunarscience.nasa.gov. Any opinions expressed are those of the individual and do not necessarily reflect the opinion of NASA or the NASA Lunar Science Institute. This podcast is produced for educational and information purposes only. On behalf of the NASA Lunar Science Institute, thanks for listening.
You are listening to the IYA 365 Days of Astronomy podcast.
The 365 Days of Astronomy podcast is produced by Astrosphere New Media Association. Audio post-production by Richard Drum. Bandwidth donated by Libsyn.com and Wizard Media. Web design by Clockwork Active Media Systems. You may reproduce and distribute this audio for non-commercial purposes. Please consider supporting the podcast with a few dollars or euros. Visit us on the web at 365daysofastronomy.org or email us at info@365daysofastronomy.org. Until tomorrow, goodbye.